comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. This is the show where you matter. K-Files tonight. Tonight, after the show, we start sending out our weekly newsletter. So if you haven't subscribed, be sure you do. And you can do that right here on the website, kevinsmithshow.com. Just look for the link that says K-Files, and it takes about 10 seconds. Video chat tomorrow in our members area for those who are subscribed to the members area. Tomorrow morning, we will have a video chat with Aaron McCollum. He's pretty controversial. The things that he says are pretty controversial. That's why you need to be there. So you can either call in with your questions or you can type it right into the chat screen, and we'll get him to read that and respond to those things as well. Members area, well, it's 23 cents a day. Very, very, very excessively expensive. If you're not a member, perhaps you should consider becoming a member. 23 cents a day. That's less expensive than your last cup of coffee. I got an email today. I'm on this is not just to me. It's to a list of people. I'm on a list. And it says, has anyone besides myself noticed that virtually all of the main vaccination truth, health freedom, alternative news, web media newsletters, activist listservs have failed to cover two important stories this week? Well, we fall into that category because it's alternative news, alternative information here. It says, despite the fact that all of them were contacted, and one of these stories was especially time-sensitive. And the writer lists the two stories. And the first one is a measure in the New York State Senate that would essentially impose forced vaccinations on children under 18 attending public school by allowing vaccinations to be administered without parental consent. Well, I know that the writer of this letter, this email, does not listen to the Kevin Smith Show. And how do I know that? Because I did cover that on air. You will remember, I mentioned on February the 7th that on February the 8th that vote was to be taken in New York, and people in New York needed to be aware of it so that they would have time to contact the people they have elected. So to the writer of the letter, Rebecca, they used to say on the CB, got your ears on? Tonight, my guest will be Jeff Harvey. Those of you who have been listening for quite some time know that when Jeff first started coming on this show, it was because of his work as a remote viewer. And we've had him on to talk about several topics. But tonight, he's back as a remote viewer, and we're going to be talking about the Gulf of Aden. Don't go away. And welcome back. I said at the top of the show that my guest this evening is Jeff Harvey. And we sort of are coming full circle with him because when he first started appearing on this show, it was because of his work as a remote viewer and also in those early shows because of an implant, possibly alien implant, that he found in his leg and that was removed by Dr. Lear and team. We've had him on the show talking about other things since then, and tonight we're back to remote viewing. And Jeff, welcome back to the show. I'm delighted you're here.
Good evening, Kevin. Good to talk with you again.
Jeff, there is a big dust-up on the Internet about the Gulf of Aden, or the Gulf of Aden, as we say here in the USA. And the dust-up has to do with information that's out there on the Internet that says that what is happening is that on January the 5th, 2010, a stargate deep in the ocean opened up. And there, according to this information, there are about 300 warships from various nations gathered around. And they're keeping shipping away from the area of this stargate. Well, of course, that kind of information is sensational, and it has everybody's interest, but it has my interest. But those of us who do a little bit of critical thinking always back up and say, okay, well, that's interesting. Now, what evidence is there to support this? So I have asked you, as you know, in private conversation to look into this and see what you can find out. And I want us to talk about that here tonight. First, the main source of that information, as far as I can tell, has been Project Camelot and an interview they did with a young man by the name of Aaron McCollum. Aaron McCollum, for those of you who are not familiar, says that he, at the age of 3, got put into a special program, project, under MK Ultra. And there was all kinds of training, all kinds of molding of his mind and personality. And to make a long story short, he got put into Project Talent, and he was then serving as what has come to be known as a super soldier. And he did 10 years with the Coast Guard as his official duty station, but then was pulled out to do special missions. And then I forget how long ago, a few years ago, a couple of years ago maybe, he started to have questions about what they were doing. And according to him, he took those questions to his commander, and the next thing he knew, he was strapped down in a hospital somewhere way out in the jungle. And then the next thing he knew after that is he was in Portland, Oregon at the airport with 2 bags and had no idea how he got there or why he was there. So that's the story of Aaron McCollum, who will be with us tomorrow in the members area in a video chat. And Jeff, you've seen this video at Project Camelot. What do you think about what you saw? What do you think about Aaron McCollum and his story?
Well, first of all, I think it's a crappy way to get a pink slip from the government, but that's simply personal opinion. But that is how they do business when they're in the black ops side. Basically, you get a divorce, and the divorce is reasonably final, and that's pretty much how it works. He should count himself lucky, however, because that's not usually how a pink slip is issued. At least not in the black ops side. So he fared quite well by comparison to others. Now, let's take a look at this critically, because that was an interesting interview, and I actually had to watch parts of it a couple of times, because if you take a look at Aaron, you see initially, and he commented on himself, you know, the tattoos, the earrings, and all that, the accoutrement from typically times in one's life when emotional stability is at a minimum, and usually ingestion of a lot of alcohol or drugs is at a maximum. And typically that happens when the psyche is having difficulties accepting the position that the person is in at the time and fighting to get out of it. So it simply is no different than when you get a cold or a flu. You get stomach ache, diarrhea, headaches, all kinds of things screaming at you, telling you you're processing too much. And that's what your kidney and liver will do. Your brain, on the other side, will make you pretty darned unstable, and it will make you lose judgment, do things you wouldn't normally do, and bottom line, it's simply screaming for you to wake the heck up and get out of whatever situation you're in, because it's not good for you. So if you look at it from that point of view, everything Aaron says matches the story he tells. And I don't say story in a negative way. I'm just saying that since I wasn't there, it's hard for me to say yay or nay that, yep, I'm positive he was there. But everything matches from what I see. The one area that gave me some pause, which you and I spoke about briefly, was if you watch that video very, very carefully. And for me, I was trained in a lot of fun things, but one of the things I learned at the behest of a psychologist that was a friend of mine when I first was inducted into Intel, was he said, your best bet is to start studying body language, he said, because you're going to find that many times most people, no matter what they do in telling a story, they can't fake their body language that well unless it's rehearsed to a T over and over again. And to a point, he was right. So in that particular vein, if you watched Aaron's face, and especially his eyes when he was telling the story, you'll notice at between six and a dozen different points, his eyes switched dramatically to the left, perfectly level, but they grew extremely wide, and it happened for roughly, a millisecond. You know, basically you're looking at a half a second to a quarter second worth of movement. And that's an awfully fast shift. And it wasn't like it was reverberating back and forth, left and right. It would be at certain points in the conversation. And what I have to do is go review that and mark the points, what the conversation was, what he was being asked, and how he responded, so I can get a better judgment of that. I didn't have enough time to do that. But I did watch four other videos on Aiden today to take a look to see what in there looked good, what didn't. But if you take a look at Aaron in that video, that eye shift is, to me, something that needs to be looked at, because it's not a normal eye shift, and it's extremely dramatic. Now, again, it could be a combination of many things, memory retrieval. It could be something where, like you said, he's thinking about something. But it also could be the result of thoughts attempting to escape that were buried or hidden due to drug programming, hypnosis, that sort of thing.
All right, now when you say his eyes shift to the left, your left or his?
His left.
His left. In our training, we were taught that when the eyes shift to the left, if they go straight around towards the ear, you're remembering something that you heard. If it's up and to the left, you're remembering an event. You're watching it play like a movie in your head.
When you say it's something you heard, do you mean it's something you heard someone tell you or a sound that you heard?
Could be anything. If you're remembering and you're telling a story from memory, and part of that has to do with something you heard. For instance,
so it's your,
if someone were to ask me, have you ever interviewed Jeff Harvey? Yes. Well, when did you interview him last? Friday. Did he say blah, 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 blah? As I remember it, it would be normal for my eyes to shift to the left towards my ear. It's a normal thing that people do. And our attention is then focused on what we heard.
Okay, so basically that direction responds to oral input. All right.
Uh-huh.
So that's basically what we need to do, is go back through that video, pinpoint those pieces in time, play it back again to find out what the question was and what the response was when that happened, and then take a look and see if that matches up well. And after as many times as he did it, we should see a correlation, and there should be a pattern in there. Now, if you look at all of that, there's a lot of semblance, a lot of pattern in there that looks like it could be entirely true. The question is some of the information true, or is it information that is coming out that he recalls, quote-unquote, from memories that were there or memories that were implanted?
And you know, I asked him that question. I asked him that question, and he said that he couldn't be sure about all of them. He said some of them he can be sure about because it's some of them have been corroborated by family members who were present at whatever event it is that he's remembering. So he said some of it has been corroborated as actually having happened, and some of it he's not real sure.
No, and I understand where he's coming from. When the History Channel brought in a regression therapist to regress me on the implant issue, there was in that regression things that I was able to see in my mind's eye that just were very difficult for me to accept. But at the same time, I couldn't be sure what was reality and what was implanted memory. There were a couple of scenes, however, though, that I don't believe were implanted memory because they were dead square matchups with the rooms that I was in from my childhood at five. So some of it, I'm rock solid convinced was perfect memory. Others, I'm not so sure of, which is why, obviously, I want to get Daryl Sims to do a little follow-up. But as far as his interview goes, it's as credible as anything I've seen, but I'm not certain what the conclusion to make of what actually the commotion out there is about. Because if you think about all those warships from different countries that are currently not the best of buddies, all down there for one reason, you know they're not all there to help each other. And they all have a vested interest in what's going on there. And if you remember, the Navy, and let's go back a little further just for a minute, because when I was in the Navy back in the early 80s, just before I left, I worked on the Kennedy in the Intelligence Center, and in that period of time, we had just gone into Djibouti, which just so happens, if you look at the maps that I sent over there, you'll notice that's right in the Gulf of Aden. And from all purports, it appears that that's when we first got our interest in that area for that geomagnetic anomaly. And that anomaly has been written up in Nature magazine and some other places. So it's not like there's a lack of evidence for the magnetic anomaly being there in the first place. And when we talk a little bit later about something called the Curie temperature isotherm, I'll go into a few things the Navy trained me in, and I expanded on some of which they don't know about, but some of it will explain some of the possibilities for, well, not so much a magnetic anomaly as something that may actually be transdimensional, and we'll go into that later.
Okay, for those who are watching on our TV channel, I have the picture that you sent me of the Gulf, and we can see Djibouti, and it looks like there is a big trench almost a crescent-shaped, slightly crescent-shaped trench, just north and northeast of Djibouti, out in the ocean. We can see also what looks like a fairly extensive mountain range on the bottom of the ocean, all through this gulf. Is it possible that there was a time when this was not underwater and that that mountain range perhaps was inhabited?
Well, here's what's interesting about that one. And this is something that, coming from some of Sechery's work, who Walter knows very, very well, Walter Bosley, Sesh did a book called, I believe it was Handprint of Atlas, and in there he details a lot of interesting information about how ley lines and geomagnetic anomalies occur and how you can target them using a topographic map, because you can see how if you look at the crust of the Earth as being a mostly solid thing, like a skin, hanging over top of a liquid or magma solution, you would think that, okay, that could easily move back and forth across that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about that moving back and forth over time, now let's bring in the next factor, the magnetic lines of flux in the Earth, and there's many of them that are actually vortices. If you think of a spiral-shaped funnel cloud like a tornado, they spiral in a perfect Fibonacci ratio curve upwards, which if you look at volcanoes, it's a lot of what they do. What you'll see is that you look at a topographic map, and as the crust goes over one of these, whatever way that magnetic flux is affecting the crust, that crust will twist around it. So if you look at those anomalies, you can see where there would be something of that nature in there. So it's rather interesting if you think about it. So let's say for a moment that that crust area before the last upheaval of the crust, which was probably 5,000 years ago at least.
Jeff, we have to step away for a break for just a moment. Folks, we'll be back right after this. We are back, and with us this evening, Jeff Harvey. Jeff, we failed to mention at the top of the show, you know, I know, and I guess I assumed other people know, but we have new listeners. Your background is U.S. Navy, and you were in Naval Intelligence, right?
Well, I was in there, but I was in there in a interesting capacity. I was inducted into the intelligence community long before I actually got inducted into the one that most people know about.
Okay. So you had kind of a double role.
Pretty much. That's one of the reasons why there is no picture in my high school yearbook for my senior year. That was done on purpose.
Okay.
I knew what I was going to be doing. I just had no idea who was going to be pulling me in, which was interesting.
All right, back to this Gulf of Aden. We've been told that there is a stargate that opened up, and that all these ships are there for that reason. Let's talk about what's in the Gulf. Let's talk about all these ships being there and what could be the reason they are there. So I'm going to let you take the lead. What's in that Gulf that's of interest?
That's an interesting question. When I was there back in the early 80s, I was in the Intelligence Center. I worked in mission planning as a low-level tech, which was what my cover was. And it was interesting because there was an awful lot of sorties being run out there, and it wasn't just regular ops. I guess what I would think would be the best question is with our task force that was over there, it would be interesting to note how many SEALs were underwater in that area doing some looking around and what equipment might have been used to get down to the depths. Now, right now, I think Japan has, I guess, the deepest of the deep submersible rovers, and they can get down about 11,000 meters, which is, what, 5.9 miles or something. Now, if you take Google Earth, which is a cute little tool, I'm not sure I trust it implicitly, but it's pretty good at looking at a lot of these mapping features. And if you punch in Gulf of Aden and put it into Google's Earth search, Google Earth, you can zoom over there and you'll see the Alula Fartak Trench just a little bit east of where it talks about the Gulf of Aden and the Tajura Trough. And if you look at it and you put your hand or the cursor over the center of the trough, you'll notice it's around 7,000 feet. However, if you zoom in with the slider on the right very deeply into that trench, and then you go to the deepest area of it, you're going to find easily that the depth is much deeper than that. I was able to find one spot, I believe, that went over 15,000 feet. Now, that's pretty interesting. 15,700, I believe, was it. Now you're getting up into the ballpark of where you're close to 3 miles deep in there. That's a pretty deep chunk of water, which could be interesting. Now, before the break, we were talking about whether or not you thought that mountain could be inhabited, but what I was discussing was how those anomalies form, those crunches and those vortices that cause that, and that's usually electromagnetic flux affecting the crust as it goes over it and twisting it in whatever shape the flux was. And as you probably know from some of the other research that's out there, many of the mountain ranges they found in Peru and South America and other places have long, deep cave systems that are built into them from about 5,000 years ago, about the point in time when the last big major crust upheaval happened. So if you take Google Earth now, and this is still answering your question, and you zoom out from that trench just slowly, and you watch that whole trench area open up, and you get to the point where on your right-hand side to the top of your screen is the Arabian Sea, the left is the left-hand section of the Gulf of Aden. In the middle there, between those two, is a big ridgeline of mountains under sea that you suspect may have been above ground at one time and inhabited, which I do as well. But if you zoom out just a little bit further with your Google Earth, you're going to see that it's almost a circle to the right-hand side. It looks like a bit of a vortex moving, correct? There's a little bit of a round circle to...
Well, I don't have that in the picture that I have up on the screen. Sounds like we just lost Jeff. Pretty interesting, isn't it? Well, we're used to that sort of thing happening. And so I don't know if Jeff can hear me, but what we'll do is we'll release the line and we'll attempt to get him back on the line. No idea what happened. We were still connected here. But maybe Jeff was getting a little close to something there that somebody didn't want him to talk about. So let's just see if we can get him back on the line here. We sort of expect these things to happen when we talk about this type of information. Jeff, are you back with us?
At what point did you lose?
Well, the instant that you said, take a look at the little circle.
Okay. So if you notice that curve to the right coming right out of the gulf, it swings out to the right, around, and then down towards the bottom of your screen a little bit, right?
Noel, I was saying, there's not enough screen on the TV channel for that wide picture, so we don't have that on the screen. but if they look in Google Earth, they will see it.
Watching it at home, if they're using Google Earth and they zoom out a little bit, they can see that entire gulf, the Arabian Sea, and all that mountain range underneath. And there's a fissure coming right out of the center of the vortex, and it's hooking out to the right and down through the middle of that entire mountain range. And 5,000 years ago, when the last major crust upheaval was, it's entirely possible that was inhabited. But if you think about this, you should be able to use Google Earth to spot all of the rest of the vortices undersea around the planet by doing what I just showed you, looking for those circular, almost like a corkscrew shape of the Earth down below. If you look right below the head of that one, down a little bit further, and I will zoom back in to give you a name so that'll help everyone see it. You can see that over by the Seychelles, just below that, there's a curve there, which may also be another one of those anomalies. And I found several others up by Vanuatu. There's one other, and you can see more around the Earth. So that's how you can spot these, and that's what Seychery was talking about in his book. So there are ways of finding these vortices, and if you start taking that information and you punch that into some of the news records, you may be able to see where they're doing deployments to find these things. And if you recall, it has been said that the Navy, when they were out there in the Triangle, out there off of Florida, that they had found some undersea structures, and they found a couple of devices.
I don't recall that.
On a hunt. All right, well, that's something I can't recall which show I was listening to. I think it might have been Coast or one of the others. But there are people who have been tracking where they're looking for different ancient artifacts. And obviously, when we went into Iraq, that was one of the places we were looking for tech. That's one of the reasons they raided the ancient libraries, the museums, and that sort of thing. There's no reason why we would do that other than if we were going to steal their information. But the point being is that this anomaly may be tied to many, many, many other places that they're looking for ancient tech.
When you say ancient tech, what are we talking about here?
Well, if you look at Zechariah Sitchin's work and others, many years ago, and you look at the inscriptions on many of the most ancient ziggurats and other man-made features, you'll see pictures of helicopters, spaceships, energy beam weapons, all kinds of things. And what's interesting is that we in the United States and the intelligence community have known about these for a long time. The question is how are they getting the hunt done? Are they using deep submersibles to get the work done? Are they using specialized submarines with specialized hulls for deeper crush depths? How are they doing the search? That would be the question I would be asking.
All right. Now, you're talking about in the Bermuda Triangle. In that area, running right down through the Bermuda Triangle, is something called the Marianas Trench, which I thought was the deepest place in the oceans of this planet. So are you saying that in that deep trench, perhaps they have found structures and devices?
Well, that's my inference, and that's what several other folks who have been doing the research believe. I'd love to have a little proof. I'm not in there anymore, so I'm not able to go access the flash traffic like I used to be. Not that I was allowed to in the first place, but not like I was used to be anyway. If I could, I would probably be able to see a lot of the information on how the tasking was going on. In the old days, they were using KWH to encrypt a lot of traffic. I don't know what they're using today. But it's not like those things weren't accessible. So my answer to your question is, that's what I think is going on.
Well, now, it was my understanding, and I could be wrong about this, but it's my understanding that we do not have submarines that can go that deep.
I don't think we do either. I would think the only way to get there is submersibles. Now, the submersibles absolutely can go that deep with no trouble at all.
Okay, so let's say they find an ancient helicopter that's 50,000 years old. So what? Other than it's just interesting.
I don't think they'd be interested at all in an ancient helicopter.
What do you think?
The only thing they would be looking for is energy beam weapons and things that could be modified into tech that would be useful today. But let's just say that's one answer to your question, why are they down there? Now let's say there's another answer. Let's take a look at the Stargate. All right, I just got an email back from Sandra Hilliard, Rick Hilliard's wife, out in Australia. And Rick did the session. He was able to get it in time. The other folks have not been able to, so we don't have anything to correlate yet. But he was not able to find anything definitive towards a Stargate. So we have to get the other people to have the sessions done so we can collate what data we do have to be able to tell what we're dealing with. Now, I said we'd look at something called an isotherm before, remember?
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, there's a geomagnetic anomaly over there in that particular area of the Gulf of Aden. And isotherms are basically thermal layers. But let's say, for instance, if you take a look at some of the work of the latest physicists and quantum physicists, their biggest issue right now is they know that we can access other dimensions. The question is how are they being accessed? Do they leak? Are they rifts? And are there places on the Earth where these rifts occur?
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away, folks. Welcome back. Jeff, I had to cut you off in mid-sentence. I apologize, but the brakes are automatic. So when they take over, they just take over. But the floor is yours.
Understood. No trouble. You're asking what could be out there. And there's a couple of scenarios I'll run past you. One we already did was ancient tech they could be looking for. And if there's ancient tech, and you and I both know there's enough leaks in the intelligence communities with all the moles that are out there in the first place, that if somebody out in the UK finds something interesting, somebody in Russia knows about it within the week, and somebody in the US probably knows the next afternoon. And of course, China probably knows a few minutes after both of them. Point being, is that if it's ancient tech they're looking for, that would explain why, if it's a really powerful piece, so many warships would be out there. Let's look at the second possibility, the Stargate. Now, the videos that are on the web and the information we're hearing are making this akin to the Stargate from the television series, the Stargate, or the movie Stargate. And if it's a hardware Stargate, that would be understandable why you would see some disbursements and things like that in the upper atmosphere just above there. But that's another one that's very difficult to work with if you don't have the kind of electromagnetic reception equipment that the Navy has that's extraordinarily classified. As you know, they've got degaussing fields and things of that nature all over to help take the magnetic waveforms off of the ships as they come into port. But there are many, many, many other uses for degaussing arrays and strobing of them to do things, which you've probably heard of the Philadelphia experiment and others that were making use of that. But let's go to the third possibility, which is another type of Stargate. And what I mean by that could be what these physicists and quantum physicists are discussing right now, is the fact that we can move transdimensionally. The question is how? Are we able to do it through a portal-like opening, are these rifts that occur at different vortices around the world? And if so, that one's an easy one to spot where the possibilities are if we use Google Earth, which is interesting because that just shut down on me right in the middle of us taking a look. So I don't know if anyone else had some trouble with that. But you should be able to look at those maps and look for those corkscrew spiral shapes and locate some of the things that we were talking about.
Okay, so when you talk about this second type of stargate, you're talking about a naturally occurring energy vortex.
Don't know for a fact that everything involved with it is naturally occurring, although I suspect that's where these anomalies could be causing trouble transdimensionally. And maybe things are coming through that they did not expect, did not want, and certainly weren't welcoming. Now, if you look at that, that kind of a stargate could be caused by a vortex that's magnetic inside the crust of the Earth that is causing geomagnetic flux changes above the Earth and through the atmosphere. And it could be magnetic, it could be quantum, so you would have a temporal or time displacement issue in there, which brings us into some really nasty physics that mathematically, I don't know that anybody really out there has published anything that's been at least put in the press about that. But clearly, those are things that the physicists and the quantum physicists are working on. But let's suspect that that is one possibility for a moment. All right, now, for that to be closed, typically, if you look at magnetic bonds, you know when you take a magnet, if you heat it up, it loses its magnetic attraction? Have you heard that?
I have heard that, yes.
All right, and it's basically because the electron shells and bonds become much looser and weaker, so they're more easily pulled apart. Well, let's say there are magnetic fluxes that are holding that gate closed. And as you know, we just went through a blue moon phase. And let's say it takes something to trigger that for it to actually loosen up. Well, if you have a Curie temperature isotherm where it heats up dramatically at a point in time when some other trigger affects that actual point, you could loosen the bonds enough that this doorway pops open for a period of time, or it could pop open for a long period of time. And if you've got ships there for that long a period of time, one would think that that might be a possibility. But let's look at what could cause it to happen. Now, when you and I were off air, I shared with you a document.
Mm-hmm.
And this document was one that came from the Journal of Scientific Exploration, which is a publication of the Society for Scientific Exploration for those folks listening. And it's Volume 11, Issue 2, Summer of 1997, pages 109 to 122, and it's by Spottiswood. And I think his name was James Spottiswood. And basically, it's talking about anomalous cognition or remote viewing, where you can actually pick up information out of the ether that you couldn't normally get. And all trained remote viewers who know about some of the more interesting secrets behind remote viewing know that sidereal time is the time when the center of the Milky Way galaxy, or that black hole, aligns up with the center of the plane of the Earth at the point where you are doing the remote viewing. And you can get free sidereal time clocks on the web that you can put in your latitude and longitude, and it'll tell you what the optimum time to do a remote viewing session or an out-of-body experience or whatever you're trying to play with in anomalous cognition would be the best. And they're talking on the order of 300 to 400 times more accurate and sensitive. So let's say at a particular point in time, that lined up with that point on the Earth. Maybe it was at the time when we had one of those blue moons, and maybe there was a different planetary alignment causing a lot more geomagnetic stress on the Earth, which, of course, the Moon does, as we all know, with the tides. And you had enough triggers that lined up at a point that it opened. Now you've got something that's possible.
All right. Could something artificially produced trigger the opening of that Stargate?
Boy.
Such as HARP.
Really carefully. I don't think that HARP would be the tool. It might have been an aggravating factor, but I doubt that would be the tool. The Navy is probably beyond anything you can imagine as far as what they work on in high tech. Almost all intelligence communities answer to the Navy's intel groups. It's kind of interesting on how that works. But here's what's odd. If you think about all the tech that they have that they don't even let out in all of the secret labs that we have, and the Navy has a bunch of them. In fact, there's one not too far away from here where they do a lot of interesting work. I would not doubt for a moment they would not be able to generate a field effect that would be able to cause that.
So you're confident they do have the capability?
I wouldn't doubt it. I don't have physical proof in hand, but even based on some of the things I learned that they taught me in one of their most basic classes in electronics, I can see how that's easy to do. Some of the experiments I've been working on, using like the Smelyoff oscillometer and some other devices, Vertens has some. You can use some really interesting weak magnetic field effects. You can strap together Hall effect transistors. You can do an awful lot to read fields, and it doesn't take anything at all to generate fields. It's pretty easy to generate scalar wave fields. All you need is pyramid wave-shaped forms. You can feed them with quartz crystals, which obviously are piezoelectric. And I just recently learned of a new technology that I've been playing with for a long time that looks very promising on using quartz at a rotational rate, which is interesting. I've also used powdered quartz for some interesting things. So there's a lot you can do to affect fields.
You mentioned pyramid-shaped waves. That brings to mind something I want us to discuss when we come back. I want us to talk about any possible relationship between what's happening in the Gulf of Aden and all of these pyramids all over this planet. Is there any relationship between them? And then I want to talk about remote viewing this place. We'll be back, folks, right after this.
Stern would want to be if he were legit.
All right, we've got two or three things we want to discuss here before we open the telephone lines, and I will be opening the telephone lines in just a moment. My guest this evening, Jeff Harvey, former naval intelligence, remote viewer, and many other things. But tonight, in his he's got his remote viewer cap on. And we're going to get into a little bit of that here in a moment. Jeff, I want to talk about these pyramids. There's pyramids all over the planet, not just in Egypt, all over the planet. There have even been pyramids discovered in America, I understand, and in North America. So is there any connection between all these pyramids and this, whatever's happening in the Gulf of Aden?
One of the theories that is out there is that all of the pyramids were in the places where they were to form some sort of an energy connector. And I'm using that term really loosely and very vaguely because no one really has any idea whether or not that's a fact. But if you look in the Great Pyramids, there are some slots where there were things that were supposed to go that are no longer there. Many of the ziggurats that are out there all have different points where they line up, and some with different star systems, some with other things. It is not a far stretch to think that, and first of all, obviously the pyramids are not burial places for anything, but the bottom line is that if they are energy devices and they were coupled at one point, maybe even as far back as Lemurian times, who knows, it could be that they are there for either communication purposes, earth defense purposes, or something that we have not yet conceived of that has to do with something off-planet. But if we have a quantum gate of some kind down there that is either controlled or locked by magnetics, and it has come open, that would be an explanation why all kinds of countries are sending their ships down who would not normally cooperate on anything, including the transfer of gold.
So, right. Now, of course, the lamestream media story that's out is that the reason all those warships are down there is because of the pirates.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes some sense. Back in the 70s when I was in, we had satellite technology that was extremely sophisticated, and there's absolutely, positively, no way that piracy is the reason why this is happening.
And okay, explain to us why.
Well, let's look at it carefully for a second. We have the most advanced weaponry and forces in the world right now. Our satellite work is beyond belief. We are able to do tremendous amount of work on our own population for nefarious purposes, as well as to help ourselves. There's no reason why they can't literally task a dozen satellites, and that'd be nothing compared to how many are out there. We could task a few dozen satellites. We could see every single ship coming in and out of every single port going into that area. We could interdict them within a mile of getting off the coast.
Well, we lost him again. Isn't that interesting, folks? That's just absolutely fascinating. And I want to thank whoever's doing that for putting yellow highlighter above everything Jeff just said. Everything he just said, we now pay attention to because some moron out there decided Jeff couldn't talk to us. So I want to thank the morons for helping us see what is important in this story. Thank you. We appreciate your moronic and a little frustrating exercise there. So we'll try to get him back on the line. And like I say, our equipment's still hooked up. Our equipment was still connected to him. They just shut his audio off. All right? So let's try him again. Let's see if we can get him back on the telephone. I don't know if that's going to work, but we'll give it a try. So they don't want us to know about the satellites. Okay, something about the satellites there that is a ticklish situation for them. Yeah, well, see, now they're not even allowing me to get through. Okay. Maybe they don't want us to know that we have satellites that are that sensitive, but to the morons, we already know that. That's no big secret. We already know that. So we'll see... If we can get Jeff back on the line.
And there we are. Did expect that to happen a little sooner, but it happened about the time when I figured somebody would be playing with us.
Well, I don't know if you caught what I've been saying on the air, but you know, these morons that do this, it's so stupid. These must be the lowest level rejects that can't work anywhere else. And they get them to do this because these idiots don't understand when you cut somebody off like that, It puts yellow highlighter over everything they just said. We now know what was important.
Exactly the point. I know. I'm not sure which school they went to for training, but I'm seriously thinking that the instructor was drunk.
They went to the TSA school.
Well, that's below that. That's not as low as you're going to get. I could take grade schoolers that would do a better job than that.
Okay.
Anybody who's ever played hide and seek can do that job better.
All right. We'll try to press on. But you were talking about satellites. And look, morons, we already know we got great satellites, okay? So let us talk. Okay.
Right, so now where did you drop me?
We could interdict a ship within a mile of any port.
All right, so let's just look at that very simply. Bottom line, there's no way that piracy could be the reason we're out there, unless, of course, you flip that coin over and think that perhaps piracy is actually the distractive maneuver, similar to what they did with Bill Clinton and the cigar issue in the White House, while we were transferring all of our tech over to China, which obviously that was the goal behind that, is to take everybody's mind off of what was happening. Besides that and some of the other software programs that were being stolen and going over to Israel. All right, now, if it is something that's sanctioned, let's say that the piracy is being sanctioned or even encouraged so that there's an excuse for all those ships to be over there. Now we're starting to make a little sense here. Because we know we could wipe it out in no time. It's nothing at all that we'd have to worry about. So if it is sanctioned, again, the question would be by who? Obviously by the intelligence communities that maybe have some purpose in mind to make sure nobody goes over there and takes a peek at that, films that, sees what's going on, or reports back what's really happening. All right, let's say that's the case. Well, just like the drug traffic in the United States, which if you look at the intelligence communities and the black ops tribes, they're the ones who are importing all the drugs into the United States. It's not these bad guys in Bogota. It's our own guys, our own teams. You've got Colonel Bogreitz out there who detailed a lot of that, which you don't hear much from him anymore. I don't even know if he's alive. But he had videos and perfect proof that we were the ones bringing the drugs into the United States, because that's how we fund a lot of our black ops. So just like we did with that, maybe we're using the piracy issues to distract us from what's going on over there. And if that's the case, maybe they've got a couple of the dummies that they'll bust every now and then, and they're saying, yep, we're locking down it, we're cracking on it, and we're getting it done. So maybe those are the real pirates, the few that are out there. Or maybe they're the guys that some operative actually put to work to go play the piracy game.
There's also this possibility. You know, when you've got that many warships gathered up in such a small gulf, I mean, that's rather spectacular. And you have warships from nations that basically hate each other. Some of them. That's a big distraction in itself, and it does have us all looking at the Gulf of Aden. Maybe the whole thing is to get everyone looking that direction because there's something else going on somewhere else that they don't want us to see.
Excellent point.
What would you suspect it could be?
I'll be honest with you, that one is probably the $50 million question. I don't have anything that's come across my radar that looks interesting enough at this point. We all know that they had some issues going on over in Greenland a while back. We know that we've got ongoing issues in Antarctica. I just saw some recent grants that the government had posted regarding work down in Antarctica. And obviously, you know, you've got some real issues with the digging in the ice down there and what they're attempting to find. So it's entirely possible that that's the case. But if you think about that, you've got to shoot a hole in that theory with one thing. All of those countries aren't going to cooperate.
Well, especially Iran, and they have a warship there.
Right. That may just be nothing more than a regional presence for that one. Now, my thought is if you've got a lot of allies over there that are doing it, and then you got a lot of enemies that are doing it, the only way you're going to get the enemies over there is if you give them a good enough story to get over there. That's the only way you could fake that one. And not saying that's beyond anybody's comprehension or even abilities, but...
Yeah, but look, a lot of those...
Something going on.
A lot of those non-friendlies, not necessarily enemies, but not particularly friendly countries,
right,
are technologically advanced enough to detect a hoax, aren't they?
A hoax, yeah, but deliberately leaked intel through channels that they know have been compromised with moles that they know are in place that the moles don't know they're known. You know, you don't always bust the mole when he's in your office. Sometimes you just feed them data that you want to go to a specific place.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's easy to leak something that would get their radar up, but at the same time, the only thing it's serving is to get them over there to go take a look behind the curtain.
So do you suspect that there really is some type of a Stargate or vortex of some kind that is taking place there?
If I were to put my money on one of the items that we looked at, and, you know, if you're looking at hardware Stargate, quantum or magnetic or Stargate of that nature or ancient tech, I'd throw mine on something to do with the magnetic anomaly and its effects on transdimensional anything. That's where I would put my money. Doesn't mean it's the case. Could be just fanciful wishing. I don't know the answer there, but that's where I would put my money.
All right. Now, you have a remote viewing team.
For no reason.
You have a remote viewing team spread out around the world. You've already gotten one report back from a team member in Australia. And you guys, you and your team, you're going to do more remote viewing of this Gulf of Aden. When do you think...
Well, first of all, let's go over the word team.
Okay.
Across the world, there are trained remote viewers running their own teams, their own ops on different projects. The one that's working in Australia currently is doing criminal work for their own company. And what we all do for each other is when there is something of critical importance and somebody requests a session, we'll all jump in and throw in our two cents on it. And whoever is the tasker at the time, on this particular one, it just happens to be me, they'll pass all that data over to the tasker. We'll collate the data, and then we'll also, as soon as everybody is completed, we pass all the data around to each person that RV'd it, and we'll actually discuss that to see what our thoughts are and what we both agree or all agree are the data that collates, because you can only trust the information that's equally shared amongst each member. And the reason why that is because most RVers are typically about 80% active or accurate if they're well-trained. And so that 20%, you don't want to have that creep in there. So you only take the data that matches on all the different remote viewing sessions.
So if you have five people, you're looking for what matches on all five?
Right.
Okay.
And if you've got something that matches on all five and there's something that matches on three, you may consider some of the information that matches on three of them, because maybe two of those RVers on that day might have been slightly compromised. Cold, flu, sore throat, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Bang their knee on the way into the door, you know. They're distracted somewhat, so they can't focus as well on the session. So that's why you're very careful about what you accept into the session final results, because you're looking for data that's as pristine as possible so that you're not considering something that's a wild goose chase.
Okay, so with that understanding of team... You and your team are going to complete this remote viewing of the Gulf of Aden. When do you think you will have a report ready to go public?
Well, if I hear back from Walter Bosley here this weekend, we should be able sometime next week to not only have all the sessions completed, but discussed, collated, and by midweek we should be finished and be able to give you some results.
Okay, so will you come back here and talk with us about your final report?
Absolutely.
Outstanding. All right, I'm going to open up the telephone lines and the flash message board so that our audience can participate with questions or comments. This is, it's interesting. It's very interesting, mysterious. And if it is any kind of a Stargate, it is excessively important. Our telephone numbers are 623-444-5889. That's the main number. The toll-free number, it's toll-free in the USA and Canada, and that number is 888-223-4599. Okay? If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message by going to my website. Scroll down, you'll see the link that says flash message, and you can send me your question or comment that way. Or you can call the main number. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
Hi, Kevin. Jeff, I have a question for you.
Go ahead, Brent.
This kind of relates to earthquakes and volcanoes, that activity, because it seems they all happen in a chain, kind of like one builds up on the other, and it just kind of coalesces into a few major events. What is the possibility of these magnetic anomalies? This could be a first one. It could be a resultant one of a bigger change. What would are there? Do you have any clues as to whether or not this is building up, or if it's but dying down, or what the possibility is for that kind of chain reaction?
Boy, it's an interesting question, and I like the way you think. If you look at this. Well, first of all, as we all know, all of the earth changes that we've been seeing, especially the quakes, the nasty storms and things, if you look over the last 100 years and if you imagine a graph in front of you, a plot to the right is as time goes forward, and you have a straight line across most of that chart, and then all of a sudden it takes a sharp hook straight upwards. That's the last 10 or 20 years or 100 years of our time frame. Prior to that, it was almost totally flat. So in just the last 10 years, the amount of nasty earth changes, volcanoes, earthquakes, hurricanes, severe storms, those have increased dramatically. So let's just look at the geomagnetic side of that, and that's quakes and things of that nature. We've seen a tremendous amount of that changing. And if you look at it, I would have to agree that things are building to a head, which obviously agrees with, you know, the 2012 theories and all that. Because as we all know, right now there is global warming all over the entire solar system. It's not us. So it's obviously not the cars, unless, of course, you think the folks on the back end of Pluto are driving a few too many SUVs. And in that case, you know, call your congressman. Maybe they can help you with your mental issues. So the bottom line is this is happening throughout the solar system, and a lot of these observatories, like even the ones the Vatican has built down there in the southern hemisphere by Antarctica, they're all looking southward for an inbound object. And it doesn't have to strike the Earth for it to severely affect our weather and our crust. All we need is it to actually break the proton sheet from the sun between all the planets. Professor James McKinney went over a lot of this information and how it works, but if you just have an asteroid that comes through, it rocks our weather, even if it never even comes close to Earth, because it gets between us and the proton field between the sun. So it disrupts our weather tremendously. So yes, I think it's increasing.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889. Toll free, 888-223-4599. If you have observations about this, maybe you even have a speculation about this, let's hear from you, because, you see, we're not trying to present just one perspective. I think you can tell from listening to Jeff that he's presenting things from several possible perspectives. Maybe you have a perspective on this that we haven't thought of. And so it's important for you to share that with us. The whole world needs to hear that perspective as well. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
It's Mike, Kevin, from Kentucky.
Yeah, Mike.
And I'm looking at this thing in the, out there in the Gulf of Aden or Aden.
Mm-hmm.
And on Google Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And if you bring this down, this thing, there's a thing out here that looks like a, some kind of a structure underwater that's almost boat-shaped. It's many miles long, and it's like it's split in the middle of it. And when you go down underwater and look at this thing, you begin to see different colors. And not only do you see colors, but you see what it looks like, something is, it's not natural formation, like it's structured.
Okay, now when you say you're looking at something boat-shaped, is it something that's near Djibouti and it's coming from left to right towards those mountains?
No, it's stationary.
Yeah, I understand that. We'll be back right after this break, and Mike, just hang on for us. We'll be back. Okay, we are back, and on the phone with us is Mike from Kentucky. Mike, I'm not describing something moving. I'm describing a location. Is it coming from, is it extending from near Djibouti to the east in a sort of semicircular arc?
Let me back up so I can see. What I'm looking at is near, it's on this long, what looks like what could have been above ground at one time. It's near, let me see where it's near, right here on the coast. It looks like,
well, let's do it, let's do this very simply. Are you watching KSS TV?
Yes, I am.
All right, I'm going to circle what I just described, coming from Djibouti, extending to the east in an arc.
That's not the place I'm looking.
Okay, now from that place, tell me which way to go.
Pardon me?
From that place, tell me which way to go.
Aden, over more in that area right there, just a little further.
Where it says Gulf of Aden?
Yeah, it's a little further. A little further past that. To... like if you're moving to your right on the computer screen, and if you move up there and it, there's this, looks like a boat shape, like a dugout canoe shape under the water, which is not a dugout canoe. And I was just wondering if Jeff knew about this, because it definitely looks like a structure. And the closer you move where you actually see the water moving, there's always like a fog or a wave, cloudy area right around that as you get closer, and then when you get down underwater you can see colors, or right at the top of the water you begin to see the colors coming through the water, bleeding through, and then you go down under, you begin to see these shapes, and they do not look like they're natural shakes. They make right angles. There's kind of key slots and things of this nature. What do you think, Jeff?
Well, I'm having a little trouble locating the exact spot here. I'm trying to locate what you're talking about, the dugout canoe.
Let me give you, are you talking about here.
Near the West Sheba Ridge?
I don't know the name of these places. It's 13 degrees, 36 minutes, 19.16 seconds north, and 48 degrees.
Okay, hold on a second. Let me get to that in just a moment. Okay, so we're at, what was that coordinate?
You just have to slide over to it.
All right, if you hit it in, type it in
up on your bar, it's going to take you way across the...
All right, but he's asking you to give it to him again, Mike.
I know. It's 13...
Okay, hold on before you go anywhere. 13 what?
Degrees.
Okay, and how many after that?
37 minutes.
All right, hold on a second while I get to 37. Just a moment. Let me center that.
And that's
okay, 1337.
Yeah, you get the second off of that.
Okay, and what's the other part? What's my eastern?
All right, 48 degrees.
All right, let me get to 48 here. Oh, goodness, you're way over by the West Sheba Ridge, all right.
I don't know where these... Sorry. 36 minutes. Or nine, let's see, 48 degrees, 9 minutes.
Okay.
36.91 east.
All right. All right, I can see what you're talking about, that area. And you're talking about that long ridge there just off of the coast. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, and if you look right at the coast, you see there's a light blue circle of water there, and then out here on this ridge, there's this long, looks like a dugout canoe from up above.
Yeah, I see what you're talking about.
Go down underneath.
Actually, that ridge you're looking at that looks like what you call a dugout canoe,
yes.
That looks a lot more to me like an underground roadway that's extraordinarily wide. It's way too symmetrical.
Yes, and it's a structure. It's definitely something that's, in my opinion, based upon looking at it from underneath the best I could, that is not natural. It's got right angles on it. It's got keyways in it. As you
I know what you're talking about now.
More.
All right, Kevin, what he's talking about is around the world, just off the coast of many different coastlines, they've found not so much structures like this, but they've found what appears to be roadways, thoroughfares. Some of them even have structures that are actually temples, ziggurats, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are just off the coast of a lot of major areas, like off of Bimini, off of Japan. They're all claiming that they're Atlantis, and while there may be some truth to that because that was one spread-out community, the bottom line is we've got them all over the place. If you do a little research, Mike, you're going to find, you'll be able to see some photos of a lot of the expeditions down to these and what the pictures look like of the actual buildings that are just off these coastlines. And the one you're identifying there has all the looks of a very long, almost extremely straight roadway.
Right, and then this in the middle of it. But the thing that's strange to me is how the clouds form just above the water in that outline.
You've got to remember something. We don't know how faithful Google's being about translating the data. One of the reasons why we say this is because, do you remember back when there was the big flap for Greenland, and they actually blocked out an entire section of the country of Greenland? You couldn't even view anything down on the surface. Well, they are tasked with doing that, in my opinion, by the various intelligence services that do not want those areas viewed. It's just like if you try to take a peek at Groom Lake or Area 51, you're not going to see what you think. You're going to see uploaded maps or photos that have been approved and allowed for viewing by the public. You're not going to see what actually is going on there unless you have your own satellite and you can task it. So you can't really trust that kind of information level you're seeing there. Now, what I would suggest is if you look at the major contours,
interesting, isn't it, Mike?
It is. And Kevin, what I'd like you to do, if you would, after I get off and after the show's over, you would give Jeff my contact information. I've got some information I'd like to share with him as well, about, especially about that Greenland thing.
Okay, I'll do it. And thanks for the call. All I can say to the morons is thank you. Thank you. You put another yellow highlight above what he was saying. We do appreciate your assistance. We appreciate your help and your participation in the show. I don't think that's what you intend, but certainly we appreciate all the help that you're giving us. And we'll try to get Jeff back online. And Jeff, are you there? Okay.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Just after you did the comment about Area 51, they decided you didn't need to say anything else to us.
Yeah, you cannot trust the information coming out of Google Earth because the intelligence communities, in my opinion, will actually dictate what is allowed to be shown to the public. Now, major features underwater, they don't mind so much you seeing, but if you actually take a look at the ruins of some of the major ancient communities that are down there, that would be a problem for too many people to start talking about. Because then, my golly, we wouldn't be able to believe what we were taught in school.
All right, you're right about that. We have, from Australia, a flash message from Blue, and he says there's some type of circular object at G/A, and it is 12 minutes 0. I'm sorry, it says minutes here, but I think that's degrees. 12 degrees 00 minutes, 28 seconds, .00 in. And so, if you're looking at that, Jeff. Once you get there, I'll give you the other side of the coordinates.
Okay, I'm at 12 and 0, 0.
Uh-huh, and then 28.00 N. I suppose that means north.
Okay, I'm looking at a fissure ridge along that area.
All right, the other side of the coordinates, 48. 06, 20, 49.
Okay, all right, I'm in that neck of the woods, and I'm looking at a almost a somewhat slightly S-shaped depression area.
Okay.
And he's saying, what is down there?
Something circular.
Okay. Let's have a peek down here a little closer. Boy, it's so hard to see.
While you're looking at that, I'm going to bring our caller online. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, how you doing? It's Levi from Portsmouth.
Yeah, Levi.
Virginia. Hey, I heard Jeff talking earlier. He mentioned something about that they probably were digging for something in Antarctica. Kind of interested in knowing what that might be, and I'll listen off there.
Okay.
Levi, what were you saying again? Could you repeat that, please?
I heard you mentioning something about they were probably digging for something in Antarctica, and I noticed that during World War II that the Germans were real interested in Antarctica, and I was just wondering just what's down there.
Right, Joseph Farrell and Walter Bosley were talking about a lot of that. There's a lot of discussion about a very deep, deep lake down there. It's Vostok, isn't it, Kevin?
That's correct.
And it's extraordinarily deep, but down towards the bottom of this lake, it's not frozen all the way through. It's actually a warmer water down there. And from what we understand, and obviously I haven't walked down to Antarctica lately to go have a look to see what they're up to, but they're doing some digging into the ice there, and they seem pretty preoccupied down in that neck of the woods. There are grants that have been issued for research down in that neck of the woods, and if you would spend that much money doing research and actually forming teams and constructing a lot of community area down there for people.
Hate to do it. We have to step away for a break, and Levi will get the rest of that answer when we come back. Thanks for the call. We'll be back, folks. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. An amazing thing has just taken place with our incoming telephone. I tried to answer a call just as we were coming out of break. I answered it, and that part of the system has switched off. So people calling in will likely get a notice that all the lines are full. Interesting. You know, the guest is on a different system. We don't have the guest on the same system as the incoming calls. And the guest, I believe, is still with us. Jeff, are you still here?
Absolutely, Kevin.
Well, that's a miracle. Okay, let's take a look at a flash message here from Bob in Australia. Do you have any information on these anomalies reported near the coastlines of Australia?
I don't right now. However, Rick Hilliard over in Perth, he keeps an eye on a lot of that, and he's actually one of the best RVers that I've worked with in quite some time. He and I both went to training class under Ed Dames for, oh gosh, that was back in 2005. And he keeps an eye on that, and he's done the session already on this. So I'll try and get in touch with him over the weekend, and perhaps we can chat a little and see what he's uncovered on that, and I can answer that next week.
Okay. From Leonardo in Puerto Rico. Good evening, Kevin. Please ask your guest for what reason he's coming out with this information. Does he not fear for his life?
I appreciate the comment and the question. I'm a little too old to worry about my life. I'm coming out with the information because I am so sick and tired of the ignorance that's out there and the lack of information people are being provided. I'm done hiding secrets. Those days are long over for me, which is why I'm sure the Navy would never allow me back in to do any kind of research. There's far too much that they have a vested interest in keeping secret. Now, having said that, there are some things that I'd be willing to not discuss in exchange for getting some information and some of the answers that we're looking for. So I'll just put that out there.
Well, and we know they're listening.
I just want to make sure everybody's got information.
All right. Well, I'm really looking forward to the final report on your remote viewing of this Gulf of Aden. it's, as I say, you know, the raw information that we've gotten that's on the internet is very interesting if it turns out to be true in any variation. It's highly significant information, and it's information that people need.
Into the most incredible piece of information that ever came out in the time we've been alive.
Well, if it is a Stargate, yeah. If it is either mechanical or I'll use the term naturally occurring. Either way, if it is a Stargate or a trans-dimensional portal of some kind, it is probably safe to say that it is the most significant information ever to come out in the history of history.
There could be a hybrid situation here too, Kevin. Many years ago, there could have been one of those pentagonal structures placed under the surface down there, and that could mean that it is artificial, but it's working in concert with something that is natural.
Yeah.
So that's a possibility, too.
In other words, it's some type of structured technology that is tapped into something that is natural.
Correct. And, you know, way, way back, if I were somebody living in Atlantean or Lemurian times, I'd be looking to tap whatever sources of power the Earth had. And in those days, crystals were extraordinarily highly regarded. And in today's time frame, they're starting to become more so. I've done some work with them that's just amazing. And it's interesting what they'll do. We have some experiments going on all around the world right now on global coherence and using crystalline forms to actually change those vortices so that they actually do some work for us on the alternative energy side. So maybe that's something that was happening too.
Well, interestingly, without me turning the phone system off and rebooting it, it has come back up. So we have a caller, and let's go to the phone line. And, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. This is Tracy. I'm from Ontario, Canada.
Hi, Tracy. Are you a first-time caller, Tracy?
Yes, I am.
Well, you get some applause for that.
So here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
I, too, think it's a Stargate. My big question is, this has most likely been there for a long time, and either you or Jeff can respond to this. I'm wondering, why now? Why are we seeing it now?
All right, here's something interesting, Gracie. You've got a good question here. I've been working with a technology called Shakti technology. By Todd Murphy. This is something that it's based on the work of Dr. Michael A. Persinger, and it's actually a piece of headgear you can put on your brain, and you can strobe your brain with gentle electromagnetic currents to cause it to do different things. Now, if it is a Stargate, it could also be consciousness activated. And as you know, the consciousness of the planet has been rising, and the powers that be would really prefer it doesn't happen. We may have actually kicked it off ourselves. And we're playing with this technology now, and it's available to everyone. You can see it on my site, www.jeftech.net. And my site's still under construction because we took it down and are bringing it back up. But if you go to the menu at the bottom and click on that, and go to Shakti technology, there is a coil system you can get that will help you with transferring your consciousness. How will I phrase this? Altering your consciousness. And if that Stargate is a consciousness-activated device, and maybe that planetary alignment helped us raise our consciousness to the level we could activate it, we may very well be the key that opened it. And that's the
and
only answer I have.
And we may be opening many of them. And we just haven't
seen
them.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yet.
I like your idea, Tracy.
You're hoping for this.
You better believe it.
What are we going to bring in? Are you not concerned at all about if a door's open, you can't always tell.
Tracy, do you remember a movie years ago called Dune?
Yes, I love Dune.
Okay. Remember, fear is the mind killer. I try not to fear anything in life because the bottom line is I look at everything as embracing it until it proves it's my enemy. And then, with supreme prejudice, I exercise my rights.
Okay, Tracy, I want to thank you for the call, and we have to run because we're at the end of the show. Jeff, stay on the line with me for just a moment. And ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap for this evening. Jeff is going to be back with us hopefully next week with a final report on the remote viewing of this area to tell us what he and his fellow remote viewers have seen. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.